So Pinchas, Mordechai, Shimon, and Levi. So last week we did a discussion about some of the halachos of zealotry, and this week we'll do some of the maybe a paradigm or two or three or four, Pinchas, Mordechai, Shimon, and Levi, of zealotry, and see how we end up. So the source number five. It's a little bit of a giveaway that I might have taken this from someplace else. But source number five is the story of Pinchas, or at least the three of the psukim dealing with Pinchas. This is Vinei Ish. So the quick story is Vinei Ish Mivnei Yisrael Bavi Karev El Achiv Esam Midyanis Leinei Moshe Leinei Kol Eidas Bnei Yisrael Vehima Bachim Pesach Olamoed. So that there was a man from Bnei Yisrael that came and took this Midianite woman in front of Moshe, in front of everybody, and they were all crying. So nobody knew what to do. They were doing nothing. They were just very upset about it. So Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, of course, point out that Aaron is to point out that he really had peaceful intentions. It was a good thing. And I didn't get a chance to look into it, but I mentioned to a friend of mine that were giving this shir tonight. He said, make sure you mention Pinchas' tefillah. So there's a parak in Tehillim or a pastor in Tehillim where it talks about eat Palil Pinchas, and we understand it was about this, that he davened before doing it. So we have Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen v'yakam itocha eida v'yikach ramach biyado. So he got up from everybody, he had a spear in his hand, v'yivo achar ish Yisrael el akeva v'yidakir es shnehem es ish Yisrael v'yas isha el keva sa. But the Yetzer Magifah Me'al B'nei Yisrael went after the man into where they were, and he stuck a spear through both of them, the man and this woman, and the plague then stopped. Okay, and that Rashi talks about all the miracles that took place there. That's what happened, that he stuck the spear through both of them, and that caused the plague to stop. So that is the story as it appears in Chumash, and Pinchas is known as the paradigmatic zealot who we assume did a good thing. So the Mishnah tells us that there's a Mishnah towards the end of Masechet Sanhedrin that states as follows: that Gonev es hakisva, someone who steals the kisva. That's talking about somebody who steals something from the base of Migdash. V'hamikal b'kosem, or he uses curses from the dark side. V'haboel aramis, or he comes upon a non-Jewish woman, literally, as it says here in English, a Syrian woman, but it probably means any non-Jewish woman. So kinayim pogimba, so the zealot could come and knock him out. The zealots come and punish him, which means that they can come and kill him. That's what the Mishnah tells us, that these are the examples of what we call Kenai and Pogamo, that they could just be killed on the spot. Seemingly, it sounds like an act of zealotry, an act of rage. I can't believe you're doing such a thing. We're going to go ahead and kill you on the spot. So that is the Mishnah. So how does Pinchas fit into that Mishnah? So the Gemara tells us, Amar of Chista, Habalimlach ein Morinlo. Right, that if Pinchas would have come and asked, Ein Morin Lo, he would not have been listened to, or he would not have been instructed to do such a thing. Meaning, had Pinchas got and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you think is the din in such a case, or whatever, and Moshe Rabbeinu would have said, oh, well, he would not have been allowed to say to him, the din is as follows. That's what it means. Meaning, he had to come up with it on his own. We don't teach it. We don't tell a person to do it. Itmar Nami, and it said as well, Amar Abba Baruchan, Amar Yochanan. About Limloch Ein Morin Lo, someone comes and asks about it, we don't instruct him. Velo, oh, not only that, Elashim Perish Zimri Vahargu Pinchas Neragalav. Not only that, but if Zimri would have separated from her, meaning Zimri would have kind of left her for a moment, they wouldn't have been in the act itself. And Pinchas would have killed him right then. So Pinchas would have been chayiv misa. And the Gemara makes one more comment, that had Zimri turned upon Pinchas and killed him, he would not have been killed, because Pinchas had the din of a rodef. Pinchas is trying to kill him. And he's trying to kill him not within the context of Beis Din, he's coming to kill him within the context of a man killing another man. So technically he is a rodef. He is a person running after another to kill him. And a person running after another to kill him could be killed. So the Gemara is telling us that if Zimri would have wanted to, or had known, or he would have been smart enough about it, he could have killed Pinchas before Pinchas killed him, and he would have been within his rights. Nothing would have happened to him. So what's the implication of this Gemara? The implication is that although it seems like it is permissible, not only is it very rare and not normal, but it's almost outside of the context of halacha. It's almost outside of the rules of it. There's like this caveat, but even the caveat doesn't follow through on everything you would expect the caveat to follow through on, because while on one hand he is a... He's permitted to do so, still he doesn't get all of the privileges that a person who's permitted to kill another, I mean, he doesn't get all the privileges of a basin executioner would get. That's the implication of the Gemara Sanhedrin. So there's something a little unusual going. This, from the Gemara Sanhedrin, you can sense something a little unusual. The Yerushalmi records this a little bit differently, and it's a little bit more shocking the way the Yerushalmi describes it. It says, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen Ma'ra, Ra es hamaisa v'niskar l'halacha habol ha-ram es k'nayim pogim behem. So what did he see? So the Yerushalmi records that he saw this, and he remembered the halacha of habol ha-ram es k'nayim. He remembered this din. Right? Tani shelo baratzon chacham. And he also remembered that it isn't, and it's also taught that it wasn't within the will of the Chachamim, shelo baratzon chacham, that they didn't really want him to do it. So Amar Rav Yehuda bar Pazi, bikshu lindoso. Not only did they not want him to do it, but as soon as this incident occurred, they wanted to lindoso. They wanted to put him in nidui. Nidui is cherem, right? They wanted to excommunicate Pinchas. Now, why didn't they want to kill Pinchas? Well, first of all, there weren't the two witnesses, and there wasn't the proper warning, etc. And it could be that they're willing to agree that a person doesn't get executed for the case of Kanaim Pogimbo, but the fact that Ein Moron, though, that we don't instruct people to do it, and you go ahead and decide to do it, right? So then that is a big no-no. That is not a good thing to do. And therefore, even though you won't get killed, so you will be able, you will get what we call nido, you will get be put in cheirim for doing this kind of act. So they wanted to put him in cheirim. I mean, the whole group, the whole chevra was around, wanted to put him in cheirim. And ilulai, and if not for the fact, shekafso alav ruach hakodesh, if not for the fact that there is a divine spirit, a divine mention, v'amra, and said this, v'haisa lo ulzaru acharav bris kahunas olam, right, and said this, they would have done it. Meaning they were going to put it in cheirim if not for the fact that a prophecy came out and said, don't touch Pinchas, Pinchas did the right thing. Right, so what does that tell us about this kind of din, about this kind of zealotry act? That yes, there is parts of Torah that does call for zealousness, it calls for zealotry. You see three examples here where the Mishnah says black on white, the one that's supposed to do it. But yet you see from the message that one gets from the Gemara, you almost get a sense of, don't try this at home. Now, unless you're confident that there's going to be a Ruach HaKodesh, that there's going to be a divine spirit that's going to come out and say, don't worry, he did it all right, right? Then you might find yourself in a significant amount of hot water. So as we turn to there's two comments that are put on this by the... By commentators, I'd like to point out. The first one to come from the Nitziv. The Nitziv is hard to read, it's kind of blown up. But the verse right after, I mean, this little parsha here where they go and he kills him, that's the very end of Parshas Balak. I mean, Parshas Pinchas is a tradition to talk about zealotry, but the real act actually happened at the end of Parshas Balak, not in the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. The beginning of Parshas Pinchas is only talking about it, and then makes a comment that that Vaisal lo ulzaru acharav bris kuhunas olam tachas shekanol le'eloka v'chip v'ichaper al b'nei Yisrael. That him and his descendants afterwards, that's what the verse in the Torah says, had this bris kuhuna, had this kind of pact of kuhuna. Why? Because he was zealous for God, v'chaper al b'nei Yisrael, and brought upon an atonement on behalf of b'nei Yisrael. So that is a very interesting pasuk. right? He was given the bris kehunas olam. In fact, they point out that Pinchas wouldn't have been a kohen otherwise. Pinchas kind of missed the cutoff, or he was too old for the cutoff. It was only going to be the Zera Avraham coming, Zera Aaron coming after, that was going to be born after that point. But these Pinchas were before, so he was out. So Pinchas was put back in. So Pinchas went back and made the and once again made the cut of being a kohen, as learned out from this pasuk. But why? Tachas esher kano leluka, because he was zealous for Hashem. So what does it mean? What's the bris kohen asol, and what does that mean? So the Netziv explains. Bischar, and it is in Rashi's script. Bischar sheiniach kaso v'chamaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Hu b'midas HaShalom. That in the merit that he sheiniach kaso v'chamaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to leave the anger and the upsetness of God. Baruch Hu b'midas HaShalom. He was blessed with the midah of peace. Shelo yakpid velo yargiz. Right? That said, it won't be overly demanding. Uvishvil ki teva ha'maisa she'asa Pinchas la'arog nefesh biyado. And because his nature was to kill people with his hands. Hayanosein la'hashir b'leiv ha'regesh az gam achar kach. Aval be'asher haya l'shem shamayim asa ba habracha she'i ha'miyad b'nachas u'midas ha'shalom. That because he did this, because he did this act, because he killed somebody with his hands, so the fear was, is that he would continue to act in such a manner. That yes, maybe it was permissible, maybe it was okay, but that impacts you, and perhaps that's going to, that's going to stick with him for a little bit of time. So in order to avoid it sticking with him, says the Netziv, that's what the bris kahuna solam is. That's what it means that he was given this this pact of kahuna, of righteousness, the bris of shalom, right? The bris of peacefulness, so that he will kind of be shifted back towards the normal place where a person should be. So that is the comment that the Netziv gives. Torah Kamima gives takes a little bit of a different approach, which is also important to recognize. I mean, the Netziv is pointing out that things weren't so great. Things weren't, it was a thing you had to do, but you have to do it and mess things up. So you got to make, but it's not the ideal place you need to want to be. You want to be brought back to the center. That's what the Netziv says. The Torah Tamima, of course, right here, little book. See, you thank me. It looks very small, but it's much smaller in here. All right. So, the Torah Tamima is written by Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein. So what he does is he takes every Gemara, not every Gemara. He takes whatever Gemara he wants to comment on. Wherever a pasuk is quoted in the Gemara, so he'll bring that Gemara down into the commentary here, and then he'll give his own little commentary on the bottom. So the Torah Tamima is, these are quotes from the Talmud, and underneath it is where the this comment exists, and that's where this comment is coming from. So he's commenting on this quote up. Right, so he's commenting on that Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi that we quoted earlier, that they wanted to put him in Nidoy, and they were all very upset with him, and until the Baskel came out, and told everybody it was okay. So the Torah Tamima asks, what's going on here? Honestly, is it a mitzvah that you're supposed to do it, or you're not supposed to do it? Right? We learn Mishnayos, right? We learn Torah, and it seems like from the Torah that's something you're supposed to do. So something that you're supposed to do, why would it be that that we need some kind of special protection in order to allow him to keep on going? He did what he was supposed to do. He learned Mishnah, he learned the Torah, he applied it, he saw the situation, he put it into play, and he acted well. Why did he need this special protection that was granted to him? Wasn't he doing what he was supposed to be doing? And yes, I understand that there might be some mitzvahs that might draw you away, and you need to be brought back to the middle, and it might stray your midos, etc., and things like that. But the way that Yerushalmi describes it is much more harsh than that, meaning, fine, so I'll deal with it. And if I do an act that is going to lead to something, so I'll deal with it, right? If the rabbin is considered to be something that is a job that is considered too stressful, so okay, so you got to do things to deal with it and bring you back to the other side. Same thing like every other job has. So, but why you're doing what he's supposed to be doing? So why is it that that it seems like there was going to be some kind of idea to be punished? So he explains. Kama umlu, start from where it says Lamed Aleph. Kama umlu mefarshim lefarish drasha zu bichlal. Many work to understand this drasha. Aval emes yesh lefarish b'derech pashut. Some want to explain in a simple way. The Amar Bazeh tani shelo beratzon chachamim. Kolomer, that's not what the chachamim want. As if to say, had the kenayim pogim bebol aramis ein rocham nochay menu. Right, that it's that the chacham don't think they don't get much benefit. They don't get much nachas from it. The svar bazei yesh lomar the kevan the tzarich laso ze beruach kina amasis lekavon Hashem. That if somebody wants to do this, yeah, it's true. Kanaim pogimbo is a din, but the din is the halach is the law is that you better do it 100% l'shem shamayim. Im kain, if so. So if that's the case, if that's really the truth, that one must be doing it 100% l'shem shamayim, we can't just put it out there and say, okay, these are the rules, and you know, if the situation fits us, you go ahead and do it. Because if... Yeah, but you're only allowed to do it if you're 100% l'shem shamayim. Ki mi yodea, says the... Who knows? Who osa ze be'ezu paneh hatzdadis? Maybe he has another reason to do it. V'omer ki osa beruach kinas Hashem. And he said, yeah, oh, I'm a big kanai. That's why I'm doing it. But maybe he really wants to get back at that guy. Uvein ka... Last week we spoke about... Was that this year with the quarterback that when a guy makes an interception and runs back and you know everyone takes their free shot at the quarterback, right? And they say, well, I was just blocking him, you know, I was l'shem touchdown, not l'shem that I want to knock the quarterback out.
The Beit Shemesh guys, I mean, I think that there. I think there was an ulterior motive there because some kind of school that
yes.
they were supposed to get and they didn't get.
Yes.
So they certainly fit into this. Category,
yes.
Not being purely for zealots.
Yes. If that was the ulterior motive, and even if there is an emotional ulterior motive, meaning it is not l'shem shemayim, but rather is l'shem something else, even without that thing, right? Even if there's not a physical thing, but even as long, if it's not for the purely for the sake of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so you can't do it. And then you've killed somebody who wasn't really obligating misa. That's better to do chalitza than yibam. The shema ino osa l'shem mitzvahs yibam. Plus, perhaps you're not really doing it l'shem shemayim el l'shem paneh hatzdadis for me for another reason. V'nimsa nichshav v'isur eshasachem. If you don't do yibam l'shem shemayim, then what are you doing? You're marrying your brother's wife. XY, that's not a good thing. Meaning even it's another example of something that has to be done in the Shem Shemaim, which is the reason why we don't really practice it today. Right? We don't I just heard a case recently that someone was wanted someone's son died and wanted
the brother.
Yeah.
To marry the
widow. Wanted the brother, yeah, to marry the widow.
Yeah.
The evil. And the girl's like, It actually led to an issue. It was I'm not sure what the details are, but it comes up. But we don't generally practice yibum. So we don't practice Kenayim Pogimah Bizman Hazeh, because who knows who really is right? So the Yerushalmi. So whether the Yerushalmi is actually a practical thing, you need to have a prophecy, I don't know. But when, you know, it's just the standard things that we apply to Psak Halacha of, well, if it fits the situation, so then it applies, so it doesn't really fit here. It is a little bit outside of the Halacha because of the mental aspect, the Kedusha aspect that has to go along with it. So when thinking about the story of Pinchas, so we see on one hand, yes, the zealousness was there, and he is the paradigm of that, but also is the paradigm of bringing back to the middle. On one hand, because he better be L'Shem Shemayim, meaning he was able to do L'Shem Shemayim. But if you're not doing L'Shem Shemayim, the halacha doesn't really apply. And the second reason is because you better be careful also, as the Netziv said, that yes, it is a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah with some quote-unquote negative consequences. There's some things that we don't necessarily, there's some negative outcomes, and one better be careful to bring themselves back to normalcy after performing such things. I mean, it's not something that one wants to do. Right? The Golda Meir had some line that to the Arabs, like, I could forgive you for
what you made our sons do.
I can never forgive
you for what you made our sons do. That's what
it's the violence I can forgive or something, but you made our sons into murderers. That's what I can't forgive.
I can forgive you for killing our people, but I can't forgive you for teaching our people how to hate.
Right, so I can't imagine that was really the first half of the quote. I had to find that inside.
The Arabs interpreted it as a sign of weakness when she said that. But, you know, we said it was a great quote, but, you know, it's...
That also tells you something. All right, so... okay, so that is Pinchas. Pinchas really is the classical zealot. In fact, he's... I mean, Rashi that Eliyahu and Pinchas are very well connected, even the same neshama, but are very well connected. Eliyahu and Pinchas, Eliyahu we covered in the Navi Shir, but perhaps we'll go to. But you see, at least from here, that the idea of balance is very relevant. The idea of the kedusha aspect to it has to somehow bring a person back to the middle. So there's another big sugya, the sugya of Shimon and Levi. So Shimon and Levi, they were near Shechem. Right, bad things have happened to the Jews in Shechem for a very long time, and they were and Dina was abducted, and Dina was raped, and Shimon and Levi performed this trick. Right, they told everybody, "Hey, why don't you we'll all marry each other? It'll be wonderful." All the men have to get their bris milas, and on the third day they went around and they killed everybody. Right, and at the end of that story. So Yaakov pulls them aside and says, "Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi, akarsem osi lahavisheni." Right, you've caused me a big problem, caused embarrassment to me. But Yeshiv Aris beknani befrizi vahani matay misbar v'nes fu'alai v'hakoni v'nishmarati aniu besi. And they're going to stand, they're going to be makbid on me, and they're going to destroy me and my house, and all the things going to be bad. So Shimon and Levi answer, "Vayamru hachazona yases hachoseinu." Can we allow them to turn our daughter into a prutza? Can we just sit idly by while they went ahead and did that to our sister? And that's the end of the story. Right. So you're left very. Okay, well, what is the conclusion there? Who was right? Right? Yaakov yells them, "How could you have done such a thing?" And they answer back. They say, "Well, what are we supposed to do? We have to do something." And then the story ends. So who's right? Did Yaakov give in at the end? So many assume. Well, we'll see. So the Rambam says no. But actually, Shimon and Levi were correct. The Rambam, in all places, in the Mishnah Torah itself, in his book of Halacha, also begins acting like a parshanut. He goes back into the Tanakh and explains as follows. He's talking about Hilchos Malachim. So he's talking about the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, and perhaps the hardest of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach to define, is the mitzvah to set up dinim, to set up din, to set up to set up some kind of court system. Right, so how do you exactly define that they're doing that? So the Rambam writes, "V'keitzah mitzuvin al hadinim." What does it mean that they're commanded to do dinim? So chayvim lahoshiv dayan v'shovtim v'chol plach u'plach ladun v'sheish mitzvos elu. Right, they're mechuyev to set up judges or some kind of system where they'll be in every village or every settlement in order to judge the other six mitzvos. Right, they have seven mitzvos to do. One of them is set up a court system. Right, the court system is to judge them on their responsibility to do the other six mitzvos. Ulahazir es ha'am. And to maintain law and order amongst the people. Uven noach she'omar al achas misheva mitzvos elu, yeherag b'sayif. If a non-Jew violates this, so then they are chayiv misa. Any of the mitzvos, any of the Zion mitzvos b'nei noach, might carry with it, for a non-Jew, they carry with it a death penalty. That's what the Rambam passes here. Umifnei zeh, and therefore, says the Rambam, nischayivu kol bali shchem hariga. That's why all the members of the city of Shechem are chayiv misa. Sharei Shechem gazal, they stole, meaning they stole Dina. Vehim ra'u, right, Shechem himself, meaning the person Shechem, stole, kidnapped. Vehim ra'u, they saw, v'yedu, and they knew about it. V'lo danu, and they didn't do anything about it. So therefore they were all chayiv misa. So as you can see, there is this Rambam is chiddush al gavi chiddush al gavi chiddush. I mean, there is many levels to this Rambam that one can disagree with. Right, but this is what the Rambam says, right? You can disagree with the Rambam and say, well, wait a second. Who necessarily says that that's what the halacha of din is, to set up, to maintain law and order? Maybe there only has to be a possibility to, you know, to bring people someplace, right? Maybe they did have a court system, but this was above the court system. Maybe, and Rambam, how do you know that you're chayav misa for all seven? I'm not sure that that's necessarily true, that it's so obvious that one would be chayav misa even for only, for this, if one lacks the positive commandment, right? If it's a positive commandment to set up a court system, so we don't have in any of our laws that you can get killed for not doing a positive thing, right? They're just not doing anything. And the third thing is, who says that every member of the city is responsible for it, right? If there's a leadership of the city, they're responsible for doing it. Who says that, the street sweeper, who, I don't know, I'm not sure who's paying him if there's no law and order, but who says that the Nevuch guys, that they're also responsible to set up law and order? Maybe it's a responsibility that falls upon the leadership of the people. But nevertheless, that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that the entire city of Shechem was killed because they were not carrying out their mitzvah of setting up law and order. That's what the Rambam says, and therefore he would read the psukim as saying that Hachazona Yasas Achosein, we're going to allow them to turn our daughter, our sister, into a zona, right? And we can't allow that. We can't allow that. So therefore, we al pidin, according to halacha, we went after them.
They showed there were one people because they all agreed to get circumcised. I mean, I just thought it was struck me when you said it, that the street sweeper, but they all showed their sympathy for the cause by getting circumcised.
Right. Well, they were right. They were all one people.
Complicity, whatever.
Right, but I doubt this would really be considered democracy. I mean, I don't really know what.
You think they were coerced into doing it?
Well, I don't know. Either they were coerced or not. But despite that, even if they were all one people, who says that they're all really responsible for this mitzvah?
Yeah, I'm just saying that.
Right. So the Ramban takes issue with the Rambam. It's actually a somewhat lengthy Ramban that I did not put the whole thing on. And who explains that no, Yaakov was actually right, that about Inyan Shechem, that the idea of Shechem, he actually spends a while talking about the Rambam and bringing up some of these questions against the Rambam. And then says, so what went on in Shechem? What's the story there? Kibinei Yaakov, avor shehayu anshei Shechem, rishayim, v'damam chashuv lehem, kamayim, ratzuli nakamehem becherev no kemes, that they wanted to... They saw that they were evil, and they saw their blood was worthless, so therefore they wanted to take revenge. V'hargu ha'mel v'chol anshi iro, ki avadav heim, v'sarim al mashma so. And that we are in charge, right? That they want to show that we're in charge. V'ina bris asher namolu nechshav b'neihem l'mu'uma, ki yela hachlif l'aduneihem, right? They had done this bris, but they said it's not really relevant to us, because because we're going after, we're your masters. Yaakov amar lehem bekan ki haviuhu b'sakana. So Yaakov was upset. Why was Yaakov upset with them? Right. So Yaakov was upset with them because yes, it's very nice that you want to say, well, we have a bris and we Hashem promised us that the land was going to be ours and the land is going to be ours. Yaakov says to them, but you put us all in danger. No one's going to take us seriously anymore. You're going to get us all killed. It's very nice that you want to say that we have a promise from Hashem, but like, come on, we live in the real world, which also obviously has some relevance to current events. They brought, right, Visham Arar Apam Ki Asu Chamasli Anshe Yir, right, and therefore he cursed them that they had done bad things to the city. Shamulahem Bima Amado Vyeshvenu Eschem Behind Ulam Echad. He says, and maybe that they might, you know, they might come back and they might get us and they might cause all these problems and that will be a very bad things. And that's why he says, what's that pasuk from? That pasuk is not from this area. The pasuk of Klei Chamas Mechirusehem is a pasuk from his bracha to them later on in Parshas Vayechi. Right? Shimon v'Levi achim, Klei Chamas Mechirusehem. Shimon and Levi are brothers, and they have they could use their kalim for very bad things. So what's the proof that Yaakov didn't agree with them? Says the Ramban. The proof is that 20 prakim later, 23 prakim later, when it came time to give them a bracha, he still didn't give in. He was still holding this over them. So that's the story of Shimon and Levi. So it's a big dispute: was Shimon and Levi right, or was Shimon and Levi wrong? So there is a fascinating story here. In Rabbi Riskin's book that came out recently, and he'll be, of course, speaking in our city at some point in a couple of weeks on Thursday night.
Yeah, I've got your email.
Okay, please RSVP. So he has the story that that in the 60s and 70s, Rabbi Riskin was set up schools. The Torah, the Or Torah schools that he set up in New York, and he set up many of these schools. So he set them up through through Torah Mesorah. So the Torah Mesorah wanted to, or somebody put him down as one of the honorees at the Torah Mesorah dinner. Put Rabbi Riskin down that he would be honored at the Torah Mesorah dinner. And that led to somewhat of a dispute because some people did in the Torah Mesorah group, were not interested in honoring him, especially for some of the things he was involved. There were some what they would call controversial things that he was involved in within the Lincoln Square Synagogue community. So he said, "I'm willing to give it up." But still, at the meeting, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who he had never met before, insisted that he be given the award. He elected to present the plaque to himself, but stipulated that I meet him at his home in Muncie the following day after the dinner. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, I'll present him the award at the dinner, on the condition that I get to have a schmooze with Rabbi Riskin in my home the next day. So Rabbi Riskin says that that's what happened. The next day he drove up to Muncie, and Rav Yaakov sat him down and gave him some tea and cake. Rav Yaakov was over 90 years old at the time. And he asked him, could you please describe the beginning of the things that you've done? And he listened, he told the whole story, he talked about the mechitza and the kafos and that they teach Torah to him. He told them the entire story. So after he finished it, so he shared the something from Parshas Vayechi, and he asked this question. He said, although Shimon and Levi have been shouted out by the father, they were now given a blessing. That Levi was to be the tribal that was going to be, for, you know, the father of Aaron, etc. And Shimon would have many Torah educators that come from him. But why would they get that if destroying Shechem was considered such a terrible thing? I mean, why would they get some kind of bracha from it if what they did? He's asking the question a little bit differently than we did, not exactly the Ramban's comparison, but still, the same question, right? What they did, was it correct or was it incorrect? So Rav Yaakov said, so what was it? Was it right or was it wrong? So Rav Yaakov smiled as he answered his own question. It was true that Shimon and Levi had acted forcefully and without due process, but they truly felt that they had no recourse. After all, while Shechem and his father Hamor came to discuss marriage to Dinah with the family of Yaakov, the raped Dinah was still being held captive in the city of Shechem with the knowledge of all its inhabitants. Indeed, their response to their father's seeming displeasure is, can we allow our sister to be made into a harlot? They did what they did for the future security and pride of Israel. Their father Yaakov understood all this, and that's why he blessed them with the priesthood and the keys to education. Religious and educational leadership must take responsibility and even risks for the security and pride of our nation. At the same time, however, leaders who act without due process, even with the best of intentions and even in the most necessary of situations, must be shouted at and must be reprimanded. Otherwise, less sincere individuals or weaker individuals who may not be able to limit or contain such activities to the specific moment or situation of exigency may learn from them, attempt to copy them, and wreak havoc rather than salvation. Therefore, Yaakov had to shout at Shimon and Levi lest the wrong people learn from them, but at the same time he had to give them the choice blessing so that they would continue to battle for the pride and security of Israel. Yaakov had to shout, and Shimon and Levi had to act. I want to ask from Shmuel about that when they have a chance there. More than welcome to. Okay, so this.
So who's is he comparing Shimon and Levi to Rabbi?
Yes, that's what he's saying. He's saying yes. They had to be yelled at, but at the same time, they still had to do it. I think I was in yeshiva. One of them gave the following mashal about a student who someone who's a b'nei yeshiva who wants to be involved and go, you know, be an advisor for NCSY. So he's running around every, you know, once a month or every other week. He's got to run someplace across the country to do some kind of NCSY shabbat. So, and the mashgiach's yelling at him, "You got to learn, you got to learn, you got to learn." And the student says, "Okay, I got to do this, I got to do that, right?" So, well, who's right? Right. So the answer is they're both right. The student's got to do what he's got to do, and the mashgiach's got to yell at him. But the mashgiach's got to yell at him. And at the end, it comes out with someplace, hopefully someplace in the middle.
It was a very telling, from that story, though, it's very telling that it's necessary to reprimand precisely not so much for that individual,
right,
but for everyone else, that we should know that the circumstances under which Shimon and Levi did what they did.
Right.
Or for that matter, from we were giving over before Bat Vegas, were, I wouldn't say, I guess extraordinary is a probably fair, decent word to use here. It may not be the best. And should not be considered to be even so-called normative behavior.
Right. Right, that's a, yes, that's a, so the paragraph after, I left a paragraph off. This is my, he concluded by saying, Yaakov concluded by saying, this is my message to you, my young friend. Zay muzin shrayin unir muzin tuchen. Tun, I think it is. Right, which means, anyone know?
Yes.
Anyone know? Zay muzin shrayin, that I could figure out.
Yeah.
They're going to continue to yell, ur muz tuchen, and you're going to continue to do. Okay, Purim is coming up, and there is a example of zealotry. There are several examples of zealotry within Megillas Esther. So I just pointed out one interesting aura that I noticed a while ago. That is that I found fascinating. The question is how did the whole story of Purim take off? So Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman, right? And one could raise the question: why did Mordechai bow down to Haman? Right, there's nothing in the psukim themselves. Yes, there is a medrash saying an idol around his neck. Right, that's the Gemara says. But why not? Simple pshat, simple explanation in the psukim, so that could answer the question. Well, there was an avodah zarah aspect. I actually tonight I didn't get a chance to look at it, but in between parents at parent teacher conference. So on YU Torah, I noticed that there is a in print shir by Rabbi Jachter. With the title being "Why Didn't Mordechai Bow Down to Haman?" And I just look quickly. He has six or seven answers based on different Mishonim, or different midrashim, right? So one can take a look there and see all the, you know, see a list of answers to that question. But Mordechai seems to have gone above what was required. That seems to be an understanding of what's going on. So there's two midrashim. However, now one medrash and one very interesting source to take a look at. I think I quoted that one other one before. But the Agadas Esther says as follows, which is a medrash on Megillas Esther on the right side, found on Hebrew books. By Yomer Abdei Hamelach Asher Bishar Hamelach Amar Lo Haman Harasha B'chol Avadav. Right, so Haman Harasha and all of his servants Madua Taover Es Mitzvas Hamelach. Right, why are you violating the mitzvah of the king? So Amar Yehudi ani, he says, I'm a Yehudi. So Amar lo Haman v'lo avicha hishtachaveh le'esav Abba. He says, but wait a second, your father bowed down to Esav. Who's he referring to? He's referring to Yaakov. Yaakov gave a significant amount of respect to Yaakov. Why can't he? Right? So it's not a problem of bowing down to a human being, right? So if your forefather could bow down to Yaakov, to Esav, so you should be able to bow down to me. So he says, Amar lo bishashi ishtachaveh, in the time when he did that, hay binyamin b'me'imo v'lo ishtachaveh lo. He says, when he did that, Binyamin wasn't born yet, and Binyamin didn't bow to you. Vani bino shel Binyamin. And I'm from Binyamin. Shneemar ishimini. Now, he's also from Yaakov. but he's saying, I'm from Binyamin. Because shem shelo yishtachaveh avi, kachani einam yishtachaveh loch. Just as my father didn't bow to you, so too I won't bow to you either. Lekach neemar u'mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh. That Mordechai didn't give in, and he didn't bow down, right? So that's the two, right? He didn't give in to the argument, and he continued not to bow down either. Right, so already you say, well, wait a second, so Yaakov was wrong. What exactly does that medrash mean?
It doesn't make sense. Binyamin couldn't bow down, he was in utero.
Right, but he's saying, don't hold that against me, but Binyamin wouldn't have done it either. Right, he's saying, you don't have a proof to me, because I don't, he's saying, I'm not bound to that. Right, the other source, perhaps, say that's not. That's just saying I'm not bound to that. That's not necessarily proving to me halacha. The other is the Shar HaGigulim of the Rav Chaim Vital, which I admit I am not an expert in, but this source was pointed out to me. So it says Mordechai shelo rotz liyishtachavos lifnei Haman v'tirit sevas shetachnis es Yisrael b'sakanas gedolas techonas Mikhuvenes haya Mordechai haya Gilgul Yaakov. That Mordechai was actually a reincarnation of Yaakov. V'Haman haya Gilgul Esav, and Haman was a Gilgul of Esav. Uma v'al ma. I think that says Shishdachavos Yaakov leEsav v'kara oso Adoni Esav. Right, the fact that he was so excited to bow down to Yaakov, that Yaakov bowed down to Esav, and that he called him his master. Lachin ata kana oso le'evid. He says, now I became a slave. V'gam lo rotz li'shtachavos lefanav k'tishi yisachin kilkul harishon. Right, now I'm not going to bow to you, even though perhaps I should have, in order not to have, in order to be misaki, in order to fix the first problem that was. So you saw that. I remember in Shul, when we got up to Parshas Vayishlach, I think we pointed that out, that the Ramban is not so happy with the way that that Yaakov treated Esav. He didn't think that Yaakov did the correct thing. And this is that Mordechai is actually coming to fix that. So with both of these things, what does it mean that Yaakov was wrong? So I'm not sure it means that Yaakov was wrong. I think it means that there's some degree of balance that needs to be searched for. I think it's not pointing out the right and wrong, rather it's pointing out the dialectic, that these are a conflict, and it's a question that when to step up and when to step back is not something that is easily resolvable. And one can look through all of sources and many of the other sources of apparent zealotry within Tanakh, and one will come to a similar conclusion that it's a little bit hazy about how far does one go, or how far should one go, and it probably is subjective to the situation, it's subjective to the generation, and it's certainly subjective to the people that would possibly be involved. There is one more thing to point out. This Or HaChaim is quoted often, that in the parsha of the Ir Nidachas, right? The Ir Nidachas is the city that gets destroyed because of Avodah Zarah, and it gets not just destroyed; it gets pummeled. It gets really knocked out. And the pasuk tells us, you're not allowed to keep anything. Leman yashuv Hashem micharon apo, so Hashem will back off. V'nasan lecha rachamim v'richamcha v'hirbecha kasher nishpa li'avosecha, so that he can go back and have rachamim and much rachamim on you, like he promised to your fathers. So what is this extensive rachamim that's being discussed here? So the Or HaChaim explains, Kavanas maimer zekan, lefi shetziva al ir hanidach, sheyergu kol ir lefi charev, afil beimasa, maisa azeh, yulad teva achzorios b'leiv adam. He says that this act of going and killing out and destroying the ir nidachas, so that causes, that will imbue people with a midah of achzorios, with a midah, with a characteristic of purity.
Cruelty.
I said purity. Cruelty. Excuse me. Etc. So lazet, second paragraph. That if you do this, Hashem will give you rachamim. Hagam shedvia yulad behem achzorius makor harachm yeshbi aleim koach harachamim. That because you perhaps demonstrated the midah of achzorius, Hakadosh Baruch Hu feels responsible to imbue within you a little bit more of the midah of rachamim, the midah of mercy. And that's what it means. But asan l'charachmim, he'll give you rachamim. Not that he will have mercy on you, but he will give you rachamim in order to make up for the impact that we have. So we have to be balance is very important. Balance in terms of the action, balance within oneself when they do get involved in such kinds of things, of protesting or not protesting, and protesting, etc. To make sure that we stay someplace in the middle and remain ohavei shalom. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, the reverse by shell, perhaps.